Listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. It's Friday, May 2nd, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gwyneth Chi, Shawa, Tuxik Nusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us behind the scenes in the studio on our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive. Or on KTOO's Facebook and Instagram pages. Today, we chat with two gentlemen who flew around the world in a Cessna 210 to help raise funds for polio eradication. Now they are in town as the keynote speakers for the Rotary Conference. The Alaska State Museum opens its new exhibit about the boreal forest with a reception and lecture this first Friday. Siegla is here to share about a bevy of May events, including the first annual Bloom Fest on May 24th. And Juno Jazz and Classics kicks off tonight with a festival party, and the first concerts begin tomorrow, Saturday, May 3rd. Artistic director Zul Bailey stops in for a preview. Those previews and conversations this hour on Juno Afternoon. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from Tlingit Ani and the homelands of the Occoquan. The specific area where our building sits is the ancestral home of the Clenedi, or Dog Salmon people of the Occoquan. We acknowledge those families of the Clenedi who made use of this land and waterway for thousands of years and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Gwyneth Cheesh. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO at 104.3 Juno and 91.7 Juno Auk Bay. And online at ktoo.org. You can also join us behind the scenes on the live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram pages. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. John Ockenfels from Iowa City and Peter Tehan from Cedar Rapids are cousins. And in 2023, they made a three-month round-the-world trip to help eradicate polio. They will share their powerful story of Around the World, Flight to End Polio tomorrow, on Saturday, May 3rd, from 2:30 to 4:30 at the Alaska Seaplanes Hangar, the Bravo Room, I believe. And they are some pretty outstanding gentlemen. In 2024, Peter was recognized with Rotary's highest individual honor, the Service Above Self Award. Peter was also recognized as now it's one of nine Rotarians worldwide to receive the Rotary Foundation's Service Award for a polio-free world. But John, let's not have him. We don't want to say he's no slouch himself. He beat Peter to the award in 2021. At that point, John was recognized as one of three Rotarians worldwide to receive the Rotary Foundation Service Award for polio for a polio-free world. And in 2023, he was recognized as well with the Service Above Self Award. Gwyneth Chi, Shatye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio today. Is this your first time to Alaska?
Yes, it's my first time, and glad to be here. And
it's my first time. I've never been here until the airplane landed Monday morning.
I love that. That was John who's just said that, and Peter there also. So Wasaiti, I hope you both are enjoying this weather that we have for you today.
It's been fun. Yeah. You know, we've had a great time driving around the community, going to different spots, and it's just the culture and the ethic and the history that you're mentioning is wonderful to, you know, to embrace and the experience.
Yeah, for sure. So,
you know, we did accomplish something on this trip so far that we haven't on any other. We have found the end of the road a couple times, but this is the first time we found both ends of the road.
Yeah, there's actually, I think of it as an X because my daughter was visiting one time and we drove to each end of where the road stops. And it's kind of like, we have like an X here where you can go to Sandy Beach, you can go out the end of Douglas, you can go out the end of the road, or you can go out Thane, and you kind of run into the same problem. It's a lot of people love it about that. I love it that you have to either fly or take a boat to get here.
It's like going to Hawaii.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you gentlemen are very familiar with flying. I'm curious about this trip. It happened in 2023. You went around the world. You're one of only, you're a couple, I should say, of only about 700 folks who've done this in a small plane, right, that have gone gone around the world.
In 100 years.
In 100 years. Wow. Yes. Yeah, because I guess the airplanes really still aren't that old, right?
We just celebrated the 100th year anniversary of the very first round-the-world flight a couple months ago.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's not happened a lot.
So what brought you to, I know obviously people who know Rotary, it's a service organization, one of their big things worldwide is to eradicate polio, and in each town there's a Rotary Club. I think we have three or four here in Juneau. And that is awesome. But I'm also curious, like, so you were obviously Rotarians down in Iowa doing your thing. But what got this idea going about who had the idea to fly around the world?
To be honest with you, I think this is Peter's fault.
Okay, Peter, what happened?
Well, back in 2017, I didn't have anything else going on, I guess. And I wondered, can I fly us? I had a plane. And I said, I wonder if I could fly this around the world. At that point, it had no clue. So I told my wife, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? She said, great idea, dear. Go ahead and keep you busy for a year. And so after a year of planning, I came back and said, hey, I can do it. Here's how I can do it. And I was all excited. And she looked at me and said, you're serious.
Oh.
You know, you're not doing it by yourself. You better find somebody as crazy as you. And that's why I called John. John had three airplanes, so that put him in the category of being crazy. So we started, and both of us were Rotarians and big humanitarians, and we said after several conversations, you know, we just can't do this just for the heck of it. We had to come up with a cause. And being Rotarians and knowing the fight that Rotary is doing since 1984 to eradicating polio in the world, we said, let's raise awareness and money to help Rotary.
Yeah, that's awesome.
At that point, we set a very aggressive goal of $10,000. Not knowing how we were going to raise it. And quite honestly, when we took off, we thought John had paid $5,000, I'd pay $5,000, and that'd get our goal. And then whatever we raised, the Gates Foundation would match 2-1. So if we raised $10,000, Gates would give $20,000, $30,000. That'd be pretty good. Well, we didn't make our goal.
I think you exceeded it.
Exceeded
by a lot.
Yeah,
right?
We're significantly over $2 million at this point.
That's amazing.
And we keep adding more and more to it. And you know, we thought we'd come back, nobody to care, maybe give 7 or 8 speeches. We are currently over 130 speeches around the world raising money. Before we came to Alaska, we were in Corpus Christi, Texas, and raised, what, $60,000, $70,000 down
there.
We're here raising money. We leave here and go to Anchorage for a Sunday, and the world is just embracing the craziness of our flight.
I think one thing that's critically important here, we mentioned we're raising money, and we used to make this same statement when we were getting ready to go a few years back. Some guy stood up in the back and said, well, that's a really impressive way to fund yourself to get a trip around the world. And then we realized we'd missed something really important in the communications. We started this adventure for us to fly the airplane around the world, which meant we would be paying 100% of the expenses and everything involved in the flight. To this day, at this time, we are still paying 100% of the expenses of everything involved in the flight, and in fact, the majority of the expenses involved in traveling and talking about it. And so 100% of the money raised, every dime, goes to the Rotary Foundation. And once it's in the Rotary Foundation, 100% of that money goes to the battle to eradicate polio in the world. There is no 25 or 40 or 60% taken off the top for administration. If they get $100, $100 goes to fight polio.
That's amazing. And that's over $2 million at this point just from this particular venture, which is kind of cool. Now, you mentioned, John, the costs. I know that it wasn't cheap to fly around the world. Did I read somewhere that it was basically about $100,000 for you all to get around the world?
Yeah, it's somewhere certainly exceeds that. But
exceeds
yes,
that,
definitely.
Okay. Yeah, to start. Because you went to – how many places did you go to?
We made 37 landings in 19 countries.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we talked about the 702 of us in history who have flown a small plane around the world. that cuts down to 456 flights. You know, some were a flight of one, some were a pilot, two people in the airplane like us. So the 456 flights, what makes us even more unique, there's only 31 of us that flew through Australia.
Oh.
And that's because of the danger of how do you get over
get
the
over,
Pacific.
Get over there, yeah.
We were originally going to fly this route in 2020 and 2021, and that was canceled because of COVID.
Right.
And then we were doing it in 2022, and Russia invaded Ukraine, which cut off access for Russia.
Well, yeah, originally, we were evicted.
Yeah, yeah, originally we were coming up through Philippines, Japan, Russia, and into Nome, Alaska.
Wow.
But we couldn't do it. We had to go to Australia. And if you look at the two longest flights on this, the first was Pango Pango America Samoa to Hawaii, which was 18 hours nonstop. And then from Hawaii to Oakland, California was 17 hours nonstop. Now that's sitting side by side, elbow to elbow, shoulder to shoulder. We had 160-gallon
fuel. Couldn't even slide the seats back.
Yeah, exactly. 160-gallon fuel bladder right behind your seats. So you couldn't get up. You couldn't move around. And you were stuck there for 18 and 17
Okay,
hours.
So that brings up an interesting question for me. Is like in terms of the actual, you're cousins. Uh-huh. So you've probably known each other a long, long time. You both have over 50 years of flying experience together, over 100 combined. So I would love to hear like, what was the best moment of the trip between the two of you, and what was the worst moment of the trip between the two of you?
Well, starting right off, we really didn't know each other very well at all because he married my cousin.
Okay.
But
10 years ago.
10 years ago, and at that time I was a district governor in Rotary. I was traveling all over the place. We never even met each other for the first 3 years. And so he called me up to invite me to come talk about some stuff and said, I'm Peter T, and I'm married to your cousin.
I see. Okay. Your cousins by marriage, as my grandmother used to say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, so we had – this was really two guys that didn't know each other very well getting together at the hip and making it work.
Wow.
And we're still that way today. It's been a phenomenal relationship. It's worked out very well. But I can tell you the biggest thing about this is it's been an experience in not quitting.
Yeah.
We've had been shot down, and literally with Russia – we could not only not go through Russia, but now we had to make the choice of either not going or selling airplanes. He sold his airplane. I sold my airplane. And together we bought the airplane that's in the photograph that we actually flew around the world. We only owned that airplane for 7 months before we departed to fly it around the world. And it spent most of its life in the time we owned it. The vast majority of the time was spent in shops being repaired or reconfigured because we made a lot of modifications. He said we had a 165-gallon fuel tank. We also extended the wingtips and put extra fuel tanks there. And we explained this. Normally that airplane holds 90 gallons of gas total. That's 4.5 hours of flying time.
Mm.
Well, we did 18. And we did that because think about taking your little minivan and you want to drive cross-country, okay, or across Alaska. So you put 3 55-gallon drums of gasoline in the back of the minivan right behind your seat, but that's kind of off balance, so you strap two more to the front bumper. It's exactly what we did in this airplane.
Wow.
That was the fuel load we carried. And when we took off, we were more than 1,000 pounds over the maximum allowable gross weight of that airplane when we started crossing the Pacific.
That's wild.
Yeah, but it's okay. We had a permit.
Yeah.
But so you're asking the best and the worst.
Yeah, it sounds like the best seems to be the bond that was created between you two.
I think so. It was a bond between us. I think one of the highlights of our trip was going to Karachi, Pakistan, which is the front line of the battle and ending polio. Afghanistan, Pakistan are the two remaining countries that still have polio in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We're down, you know, 10 years ago, you may have had over 100,000 kids infected a year. Now we're going to be, we're around a dozen.
Yeah, right now.
So we're very, very close. So to sit there and work in the ghettos, vaccinating kids, that was emotional high. One of the lows was I ended up, because of that experience in Karachi, I ended up very sick on this trip and was hospitalized three times with very bad parasite. But when the stressor of the trip really became the Pongo Pongo America Samoa up to Hawaii, that 18-hour flight. Now, when we took off out of Pongo Pongo at 4:30 in the morning, we had to communicate with an airport on the other 30 miles away.
Yeah.
After about 5 seconds, We lost communication with that controller when we went behind a mountain.
Wow.
From that point on, no one in the world knew where we were at. We were not in communication. There was no satellite communication available in that part of the world. For 18 hours, our family sat there and wondered if they ever see us show up at the other end.
All they knew for sure is we took off safely.
And it was 18 hours later, 60 miles outside of Honolulu, when we reappeared on radar and had our first voice contact with anybody in the world. For those 18 hours, it was really a hard sacrifice.
Yeah. That would be a little rough, yeah.
And then we did it the next day coming from Honolulu to Oakland, California. Yeah.
Wow, and that's amazing.
If you see a picture, Boston, you got a picture card there. I say I've got brown hair in that picture.
Right.
I got gray hair now. And that happened about 6 hours outside Honolulu when John turned to me and said, "Hey, Peter, we got a problem," which you don't want to hear on an 18-hour flight. I said, "What?" He says, "We don't have enough gas to make it to Hawaii."
And
he wasn't kidding. And fortunately, it was a calculation error that a number was written down twice. After an hour, we figured out, hey, we're going to have barely enough gas.
But we did fix the problem. We erased the second entry, and all of a sudden we had enough.
You're like, wait, the math now adds up. Well, if you want to hear more about this story from John and Peter, they are going to be talking about this. It's open to the public. It's tomorrow, Saturday, May 3rd, from 2:30 to 4:30. It's the Alaska Seaplanes Hangar Bravo. And you can listen to this fascinating tale of flying around the world. You raised over $2 million so far. In terms of what you're doing. How do people follow your journey that you're continuing on here with this? What's the best way for people to follow you? I know they can follow the Rotary Club. Is that the best place to do it?
The best place is to go to our website, flightdampolio.com, or our Facebook page, flightdampolio.
Okay.
They can also search us on YouTube, and a lot of videos and things are showing up on YouTube under Flight to End Polio.
Okay, that's great.
And they can, once they get to our website, they can go to Rotary International's Foundation page. It's on our website.
Yeah.
And they can listen to an outstanding podcast done by Rotary about the trip. They interviewed us for several hours, and they have a very, very highly rated podcast. It lasts just under 30 minutes.
That's fantastic. Well, I was happy to spend about 15 minutes with y'all learning about this. It seems like I'm sure there's many tales to tell about what you experienced on that journey. FlightToEndPolio.com is the website, and you can find all the links from there to the other areas. I think
before we wrap up, I just encourage everyone who's listening, go become a Rotarian. You know, they do a lot of good in communities. And, you know, I mean, we're looking at, for ours, international, but locally, you know, they work with kids in school. They have a student exchange program. They're building playgrounds for kids. It's a great community.
We have a unique experience. We've been to a lot of Rotary districts, a lot of Rotary clubs around the world, and especially here in the United States. And folks, you have a rare treasure right here in Juneau, Alaska. I swear to you that this is one of the best Rotary Club scenarios I've seen in a long time. You have four clubs here in Juneau, and you don't need to be anybody really special. You just need to have a community heart, a service heart. And if you can do that, and you want to go out and help your community, give a Rotarian a call. It's not nearly as formal as it used to be. Well, matter of fact, we don't even wear ties anymore. That's a great thing.
they're always looking for members, and it is. I love it. It's service above self, which is a really fantastic thing. Gwyneth Cheese, John Augenfels, and Peter Tehan for coming in and sharing a little bit about this story. Find out more at flighttoendpolio.com. I really appreciate you being here. And go to the talk tomorrow at 2:30 out at the airport.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, I really appreciate you being here. Gwyneth Cheese. Okay, up next, we will talk with the team behind In the Time of Change, the Boreal Forest Stories, opening today at the Alaska State Museum. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Bird Note.
I don't go for fancy cars.
Oh, no, no.
For diamond rings or movie stars.
No, no, no.
I go for penguins. Oh, Lord, I go for penguins.
There's just something about penguins. Pleasantly plump, they stand upright and teeter like toddlers. Penguins really are endearing. 18 different penguin species occupy the southern hemisphere. They range in size from the 4-foot-tall emperor penguins of Antarctica to the petite, 1-foot-tall little penguins of Australia and New Zealand. Though often depicted in basic black and white, most penguins are more colorful. 7 species have long, jaunty, golden feather tufts above their eyes. The largest, king and emperor penguins, have necks that glisten gold. The little penguin is blue and white. Penguin ancestry dates back at least 60 million years. One species of ancient penguin stood nearly 5 feet tall, weighed as much as a human being, and had a long, vicious-looking bill. So maybe they weren't all cute, but as Lyle Lovett sings,
penguins are so sensitive, penguins are so sensitive, penguins are so sensitive to my knees.
For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Forming an emerald ring around the circumpolar north, the boreal forest is the world's largest land-based biome. In the time of change, Boreal Forest Stories is a cross-disciplinary collaborative project examining change in the boreal forest through narrative. It opens today at the Alaska State Museum and runs through October. And tonight there is also a talk at 7 p.m. Now, I am joined by a few members of the team. The team is quite large on this. They are helping to bring this show to Juneau. I have Mary Beth Lee. How are you, Mary Beth?
Hello, very well, thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Jennifer Moss, Gunachish, Wasiati. How are you, Jennifer?
Thank you, I'm well.
Awesome. And then I have Susan Campbell, Gunachish. Susan, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having us here.
Awesome. It's such a pleasure to have you all here for this, what is a fantastic show. It's going to open today. It's going to run through October, so people don't have to rush. But what they do want to do is probably come to the talk tonight. That is happening at 7. But first of all, let's talk a little bit about this project, In the Time of Change, the Boreal Forest Stories. How did it come about, Mary Beth?
Thank you. Well, In the Time of Change, which we call ITOC for short, it emerged back in 2007. So it's been around for, almost 18 years. And we've had 7 major projects in which we brought scientists and artists together to collaborate and produce exhibits around different themes. And this one, Boreal Forest Stories, is about, of course, the boreal forest, but we challenged the participants, the visual artists, writers, educators, to all think about what narrative means and how they can tell stories about what's happening in the boreal forest that are, of course, inspired and informed by the science that's going on there. So this is all a very, it's an art-science collaborative project.
I see. So In the Time of Change is the main thing, and Boreal Forest Stories is one of the projects of that.
That's right. Yeah,
I see.
Our biggest one yet.
The biggest one yet. Why is it the biggest? What is big about it?
We have so many participants. We had over 50 this time. You know, typically we might work with 12 or 16. Mm-hmm. We had over 50 visual artists, also writers, educators, performing artists involved in this, not to mention all of the scientists who collaborated as well. So it was huge in that from that standpoint. And it went on for over 2 years of collaborative activities before we produced this exhibit, which has then been touring for several years around the state.
Okay. And you are the leader of ITOC.
That's right. Yeah, I'm the director of ITOC. And
okay.
So I co-founded it back in 2007 with ecologists and also artists and writers from the Fairbanks community.
Okay, awesome. And Jennifer Moss, what is your involvement in this?
I am primarily an artist in this,
okay.
But I also am a designer, so I help out with things like the website and any graphics that need to be done. But I've been participating in ITOC for five of the seven projects so far as an artist. So
this challenge that happened this time in terms of thinking about narrative, taking the science and turning it into narrative, as an artist, was that a challenge? How did you go about doing that?
It was a challenge. It was a challenge for me because mostly because the program introduces the artist to so many different research projects and science and things happening in the forest and many different science conversations that happen between artists and scientists, and this exchange is happening. And so most of us try to pick one thing. For me, it was my biggest challenge was picking something. I got very indecisive. Everything was so interesting. I wanted to go down through every rabbit hole to explore that and to collaborate with a scientist to kind of co-create something that would be new and different and interesting. But I couldn't decide, so I ended up picking all of them.
You can't pick one, just do them all.
Yeah, which ended up in a deck of cards.
Oh.
Inspiration cards, daily inspiration cards.
Oh, that is so
format.
Cool.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Okay, and I do want to show, for those watching the stream, I just want to pull up this picture of the boreal forest itself. I'm just showing this to folks because it's quite large. It basically almost creates a whole circle, right, Mary Beth? It's like it's giant.
Yeah, that's true. If you were to look, at a globe from the perspective of the North Pole, it would form a ring around, almost entirely around the top of that globe. And it really is so much bigger than I even realized going into this project. It's, they say, a third of all of the forested land on the planet. It covers two-thirds of Alaska, but also extends across Canada, certainly Scandinavia and Russia. As well.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a huge, expansive biome.
It's massive.
Yeah.
And Susan Campbell, what is your involvement in this particular project?
Well, I've been in three of the seven ITOC projects. And in this one, the Boreal Forest Stories, I was an artist and a writer. And I was also one of the co-curators. There were three of us that curated the show. So I was one of those also.
Okay. So that's almost a similar question as to Jennifer, but in terms of you're adding that writing component, right? Mm-hmm. So are you taking like scientific research about what's going on with the boreal forest and turning that into stories, or what was the theme for you in terms of how you came out with some writing?
Well, I'm a poet, and so I wrote poems, and so that's a really interesting question. So my poetry has science in it. But it's not, they're not teaching poems, but there is science incorporated into them. And I was really fascinated, I am fascinated by the trees of the boreal. And so I wrote poems about individual trees, like a poem about birch and a poem about tamaracks, about aspen.
Okay.
And a couple poems that have to do with climate change and how the forest, the boreal is changing because of climate change.
Right.
So it's embedded in the poem, but... Yes, and that was a challenge to do that, to not make it, make it poetry.
Right.
There was real truth in it about what's happening.
Yeah, it's hard not to, like, sometimes with, climate change issues or whatever, to maybe, like, be, nail on the head kind of thing.
Right.
But in poetry, to still have it be sort of embedded, like you said, which is kind of cool. That's awesome. And Mary Beth, what are we going to be seeing in this show over at the Alaska State Museum for the next few months?
Yeah, there's an enormous variety of different visual art styles and mediums there. We have everything from painters to art quilts. If people might remember Ree Nancaro's exhibit that was here recently.
Oh, yeah.
She has some more work in the show.
Yeah.
Incredible book arts, including one by Susan Campbell here. Of course, Moss's cards and printmaking, collage. There's even a marionette. And that's kind of a piece that's from one of the live performance elements. So that actually will be coming to town in October. On October 3rd, the puppet artist Maite Agapian will be here with composer and musician Sean Dowgray and poet Daryl Farmer to perform
Jackie, you're listening, I'm sure. I want to make sure we have them on the show.
Yeah.
That sounds too fun. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
And so much more than I can even mention. So it's astonishing. Ceramic arts too. It's a really diverse group with over 24 visual artists contributing.
How long did it take to put this show together? You said you've been working on it for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, it took nearly 2 years. We started in December of 2020. It was during COVID. So we started with a lot of virtual engagement together and then began doing field trips and more in-person interactions. And the show premiered in 2022 in the fall. And then it's been touring on and off ever since.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. So, and then there's a talk tonight at 7 o'clock. What's the talk going to be on, or who's giving the talk?
We'll be co-presenting that.
We're co-presenting.
Okay.
And it's an overview and then a little dive into vignette of some of our work.
So Mary Beth will give an overview of the whole project of In a Time of Change, and then Moss and I will talk about our roles as artists and highlight what it's like to be an artist and a writer in this project. So some specific things about that in relationship to this show and how our work has been influenced by being a participant in the climate change.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. And where are you from, Susan?
Fairbanks.
Fairbanks. And Jennifer?
Yeah. Originally, I'm from Juneau.
Oh, yes.
But I'm also from Fairbanks.
Living in Fairbanks now?
Yeah. For a long time.
Okay. And Mary Beth, you're up in Fairbanks. You work at the university,
right?
Is that right?
That's right. I do work at UAF. Yeah. Okay. And I've been there for 19 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's a long time.
It is.
I'm always curious how people live in a place for a long time. You know, I was such a I moved around so much as a younger person. I think I'm pretty solid here in Juneau now for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm always curious about that. What keeps you in Fairbanks?
Yeah, there's something really special about Fairbanks that pulls you in. And then when people leave, they just want to keep they want to come back. But I think one thing that really stands out to me about Fairbanks is just the close knit sense of community there. And it's got such a strong culture, of course, of sciences and the arts, so much happening, and also things that you can get involved in and you can make a difference there. And it's been a wonderful place, I think, that also draws people together around their love of that place and of the boreal forest, which makes projects like this a good fit for a community like Fairbanks, where we can all come together around our shared love of place.
I love that. And it is going to be, the show opens today with a reception starting at 4:30, so just in like an hour, which is going to be pretty awesome. And then there's a talk, which is at 7 o'clock tonight. Of course, you can always find out more from the Alaska State Museum by going to lam.alaska.gov. And you can also find out more about In the Time of Change at itoc.alaska.edu. And that will have future projects, I'm sure. If you've done, you said you've done seven so far, and they take, it seems like they take a little bit to put together. So are you working on a new project now?
Yeah, we have several in the works, and Moss is a participant in one of them.
Yep, we're just getting started on this one, and it'll be a four-year production, and there's three artists, Clara Mache and Sarah Tabbert and myself, and we will be looking at fire in the boreal forest and in the tundra landscapes.
Oh, wow. Wow. It's so fascinating. The boreal forest is unbelievably fascinating, and I love that it's being told in this way, through story, through narrative, challenging the artist to do that and work with the scientists. What a great collaboration it's going to be. So you can see that at the museum running through October, and it's opening tonight. And again, the talk is at 7 o'clock this evening. I really appreciate y'all being here today. Mary Beth, Jennifer, Susan, what a pleasure. Gwyneth Cheese for being here. I'll let you go back and get ready for your reception, which is kind of cool. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Up next, Sigla has a variety of events for May, including the first annual Bloom Fest. We talk with Summer Christensen for a preview next here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak. Gunish cheese.
For KTOO, I'm Mike Lane. Today is Friday, May 2nd. Sunrise was at 5 o'clock this morning. Sunset will be at 8:50 this evening. A total of 15 hours, 50 minutes, and 32 seconds of daylight today. That's a gain of 4 minutes and 44 seconds over yesterday. And taking a look back at this day in 1938, it was reported that elaborate ceremonies were planned at the Pacific Airways Airport on Glacier Highway to inaugurate the first airmail service from Juneau to Fairbanks. The Lockheed Electra plane of PAA would carry the estimated 50,000 first-day letters north from Juneau. That's a look back at this day in 1938. This is KTOO.
Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I'm joined now by Summer Christensen from Sigla with a full slate of events for May. Gunnath Cheesh, Summer, how are you today? Wasa iti.
Gunnath Cheesh, thank you for having me today. I'm doing good. I'm really tired of the rain, though, but I think everyone is.
It's just started. It's not even funny. It's just started. I'm hoping that we're getting it out of the way now because last summer was not that great. So I'm hoping like, okay, let's get it all out in May and then maybe June and July will be beautiful. And we can always hope.
I hope so.
Anyway, I pulled up your event calendar here so people watching can do that. But we have a lot to cover. So let's get started. We're going to end. We'll talk about the Bloom Fest near the end. But I want to get your other events out of the way. I guess we just go in chronological order.
Sure. So we're doing our second dog park party. This starts at 11 a.m. this Sunday. It's at the Cope Park Dog Park. You just come, bring a dog. If you don't have a dog, you're still welcome to come to talk to people or pet other people's dogs. I think at the last event, our April events, we kind of had some low turnout, mm-hmm. but part of me wonders if that was the weather. It was a rough month for outdoor events, so hopefully the weather holds up for the Sunday.
Yeah, because Sunday's supposed to be better than tomorrow, I hear.
Well, that's good.
That's what I'm hearing anyway.
But I'll be there. I'll be there with my dog. My daughter at the April one, she was like, how is this a dog park party if there's no other dogs? And I was like, that is a good point.
That's a good
question. So these events are here, but you have to go to them to make them happen.
That's right. Okay, that's on Sunday. That's the dog park. Okay.
Yeah, and then on Thursday the 8th, we have our clothing swap. This is at the Mendenhall Library from 5:30 to 7:30. And this one, we usually have quite a few people come. This is a really great event. You can bring all of your clothes that you want to part with. And it's kind of about it. Usually I bring one I'll bring a tub of my clothes and then an empty tub. And then I go home with like half of my clothes gone and a tub of new clothes. So.
Right. You think you're getting rid of a lot and then you end up
not. You're just getting more.
And what's nice is that on your poster too, you do mention that allies welcome for all of these events. There's some that maybe you are looking for allies to maybe not come depending upon the event. But most of these that you're listing here seem to be allies welcome as well, right?
Yeah, one of our board members pointed out that she had a few people come up to him and be like, oh, I don't know if I'm allowed to come to this event. So we wanted to make sure to put on the posters all the ones that allies can come to. So the dog park party, the clothing swap, definitely ally friendly. The more people, the merrier. Mm-hmm. And it just feels good, I think, as a queer person to know that you're in community with people who support you.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I know that Sigla's original name, or the original acronym, it really should just be Sigla now because it encompasses so much more than just what the original acronym was for, right?
Yeah. So now it's Southeast Alaska LGBTQIA+ Alliance. But if you think about like old high school clubs, it's the Gay Straight Alliance. So it's supposed to be like an alliance of people who are queer and they're allies and support. So
it just expanded over time. Yeah, absolutely. But you still go with Sigla as the main name. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and then the next up event is two Sundays from now, the Coffee and Chat, right?
Yeah, we had an event, I think it was last week, at the Lodestone Library, and that one a lot of people came to. This one we wanted to make sure that we had an event on Mother's Day because it can be difficult for a lot of people. So this will be from 2 to 4 p.m. You can show up, be in community. They have coffee and chai, snacks, some food now. Mm. So, yeah, it was a really good event.
And I haven't had the opportunity to celebrate Mother's Day in a long time, but I'm just curious in terms of why could it be difficult for folks?
People who might not have a good relationship with their mom anymore, or if their mother has passed on.
I see.
Just a chance to be together. And we're going to have one in June for Father's Day as well.
Oh, cool. Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's a coffee and chat. You just come and hang out. Mm-hmm. And is that one? That one doesn't say allies listed.
Yeah, this one I thought might be better if it's just the queer community. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the allies are welcome at all of the other events.
Yeah, absolutely. And the next event is another Sunday. There's the Family Park Fun. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so on Sunday the 18th, this will start at 11 a.m. at Twin Lakes Park, or as my daughter calls it, Castle Park.
Yeah.
And this is just for allies or queer families to come, kids to play, adults to chat and hang out.
I see. Okay. And what I don't see on your monthly events this time around is planning for Pride Month. Is there
you
no plan?
Me out. To put it on the poster.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a minute. Isn't that coming up pretty soon?
Yeah. So we do have a Pride planning event in May, and I can't remember what date it is off the top of my head, but I will.
But if you go to aksigla.org, you're going to be able to find out, right?
Hopefully. Yeah.
Okay.
Or it'll
follow
be on
the Facebook.
Yeah. Yep.
Facebook is usually the thing that is kept up most to date for groups. It's easier to post on there than maybe change a website around.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. And that's aksigla.org. Okay, and then next we have this awesome event, the Bloom Fest.
Yeah.
I have the specific poster for this pulled up because this is a big deal. This is the first annual Bloom Fest. What is the Bloom Fest?
Have you ever seen Parks and Recreation?
I have.
Do you know when Leslie does Harvest Festival?
I don't.
You don't? You haven't seen that far?
I have. I'm not as much of a fan as I should be.
Okay.
Even though I love the show.
She has this huge festival.
Okay.
And this is kind of my version of Leslie's Harvest Festival.
I see. Okay.
But I was like, you know, the world kind of stinks right now. What if we did like a really big market that had LGBTQIA artists and musicians, and then we had community allies, businesses, and nonprofits. So it's going to be held at the Jack on mm-hmm. Saturday, May 24th. That night is also Troll Fest, so you can go to this during the day and then go party at night.
I see.
It'll be from 10 to 2. It's a free entry, but we ask for a suggested donation of $10 at the door because Sigla, I think what a lot of people might not recognize or realize is that all of these events, they're all free for people to come to, but Sigla is like, we're paying for all of these spaces where all the events are happening. Obviously, the outdoor ones or the ones at the library are free for us to hold, but if we need to bring supplies or if, like, the rock dump, we had to pay for that cost.
Mm.
So this, we're trying to have a really great event, but also have it be a bit of a fundraiser for us so we can keep hosting all of these great events.
I see. Okay. Yep.
But it's going to be kind of a Pride Month kickoff. And like it says, there's over 30 vendors. There'll be live music the whole time, and allies are very much welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have some ideas of can you tease us with a few vendor names and maybe some musicians that might be there?
Yeah, off the top of my head. So we are going to have I was not prepared for this question. I can see the whole list. I have a list that I printed off to email everyone, and it was like 4 pages long.
Right,
people.
Right.
But we're going to have Sonia and Nina Edwards playing music.
Nice.
We're going to have Gigi and Stephanie will be there for Juno Drag. So they'll probably have like a performance element and then also a Juno Drag booth where they'll have
cool
activities for kids.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a family friendly event too. Mm-hmm. Lily Hope will be there. Rebecca Shea. We have Sundew Prince will be there.
Cool.
Desi Auntie will be there with food, and Copa will be there with drinks and maybe some snacks.
Sweet.
So
now you're on Instagram as well, right?
Yeah, and I've been teasing it for a little bit.
So what's the Insta?
The Insta is at the Sigla.
At the Sigla. Is there any underscore in there or anything?
Yeah, at the underscore Sigla.
And that's S-E-A-G-L-A. Okay, at the underscore Sigla. And because I'm imagining that over the next couple of weeks, as you're getting closer to it, you're going to be teasing more about it on the Instagram as people get closer to May 24th.
Yeah, I'm really excited. May's going to be packed. So the 17th is Alaska Robotics Minicon, and then this will be the weekend after.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this town in May. It is pretty amazing. And you yourself, your organization has, what is that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, plus the one that's not on here, the planning meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, we're really gearing up towards Pride Month, so this will be our kickoff. And then we're hoping, or we will have calendars of all the Pride events that are happening in June.
Yes.
We have, I think, almost one event for every day in June.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is. It takes a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
So.
Well, looking forward to it. Summer Christensen from Sigla here with all those events. I really appreciate you coming in and telling us a little bit about all of those. You can find out more at aksigla.org. That's right.
Yep.
That's right. aksigla.org. I really appreciate you coming in, Summer. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, up next, we will talk with the Juno Jazz and Classics because it is back for May 2025. There's a kickoff party tonight, and the first concert is happening Saturday, May 3rd. That's tomorrow. Zuul Bailey is in the house to give us a preview. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported community station, KTOO, 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at kto.org. Also live streaming on KTO's YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook pages. That right there is Mark and Maggie O'Connor. This is from their album Life After Life, and that song was called One Sunray at a Time, and I picked that because it's raining. And I really thought it would be nice to have something that is has a nice title to it. And I heard as we were walking in that you wrote that song about your daughter.
Yes, I did. And you've got a little girl here in the waiting room. She was about the same age as that little girl when I wrote that song for her.
Oh.
And Maggie's singing the lead on it. It's just, it's really, yeah. Every time we hear it, we think
it's
of
for
her.
All the parents out there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Watching their daughter grow up.
Well, it is such a pleasure to have you here. Zul Bailey is also here, Artistic Director of Juno Jazz and Classics. Wasa Iyati, Zul, how are you? Gonna cheese for being here.
I'm great and happy to be here. And look, this is a rainforest.
It is.
So, I mean,
we choose to live here.
That's correct.
Yeah, we do.
And you know what? The instruments, oh, wait, I haven't told you all this. Your instruments, the guitar, the violins, they love the rainforest. Mm-hmm. This is where the Sitka spruce comes from. Like the spruce trees, I say Sitka spruce because Sitka is where the Steinway pianos get all of their soundboards.
Wow.
So oh, that's amazing.
The top of your instruments are going to be just going,
It's like the spa day for instruments.
So the reason we're here is that Juno Jazz and Classics is back. We're back to one festival in the middle of, in May. It's 3 weeks long. And there's all kinds of things happening. Tonight, there's a kickoff party. Where's the kickoff party
at? It's Crystal Saloon, starting about 6 o'clock, yeah.
Okay, 6 o'clock tonight.
Upstairs.
And that's just to sort of get everybody together. You get to meet Mark and Maggie here, who are playing tomorrow night,
yeah.
Right? And you where will you be playing at?
Oh, they're playing at the middle school tomorrow night.
Okay, the middle school.
That's right.
Great.
7 o'clock concert, and it's our duo concert. And we are fresh off coming from Carnegie Hall last weekend where we performed our concert.
That was their warm-up.
Practice, practice, practice.
Well,
isn't that the old joke? How do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Figure it out before they get to Juno.
A little tune-up gig.
It's so funny, you know, this is totally unrelated, except Carnegie Hall is involved. Is when I moved to New York when I was a young actor in the mid-90s, I worked in Carnegie Hall. I had no idea there were actually offices in there, mm-hmm. but there's offices of businesses just in wasn't had anything to do with music, but I was like, I've made it to Carnegie Hall already, and I just moved to New York. You know, it's just so funny. But thank you. What a wonderful pleasure to have you here. What a long flight too to come all the way from New York, I guess.
Yeah, it's a long flight, but you know, we've been to Juno. We actually played at the Jazz and Classics Festival in 2018. So this is a return trip for Maggie and I.
Oh, nice. Well, welcome back to Juno. That's such a pleasure. So that was a song that we heard, One Sunray at a Time. And is that sort of indicative of your music in terms of the style of your music?
Our vocal music.
Okay.
So we do a lot of fiddling and kind of American classical violin playing.
Yeah.
Guitar, mandolin, and vocal. And when we sing, we usually do like more of an Americana bluegrassy type of sound.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of variety to our music, and it's really wonderful to share it with my wife,
Mark Maggie. Mark is also a composer, so like when we were at Carnegie Hall, the show was called Beethoven and Bluegrass, and the quartet played one of Mark's compositions, and Mark's written symphonies, so it's kind of hard to just show what we do. I mean, Mark and I even play concertos with orchestra sometimes.
Yeah. So I love that. I like this.
We have Maggie a lot of variety.
Maggie with the glow up for Mark there. I really like that, right? As the kids say, the glow up or whatever they say. I don't know what they say. But. So Zul, they're kicking off tomorrow. But you have a big schedule. Obviously, we can see the whole thing at jazzandclassics.org in terms of the schedule. But are there things that you want to highlight that are coming up that people need to be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, it's all kicking off tonight in a kind of a rally tonight at the Crystal Saloon upstairs at 6 o'clock.
Be careful with the word rally. There's a lot of those going around right now.
I see.
Oh. No politics here.
No.
This is a party about music.
Yes, a festive kickoff tonight. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Tomorrow is Mark and Maggie O'Connor at the middle school at 7 p.m. And then we have this themed concert, Everlasting Classics, with Brian Wallach. whom I met in South Africa, a wonderful pianist, who's going to be playing a lot of Franz Liszt. And the second half will be I'll join Brian to play the celebrated Chopin Cello Sonata. And then we have a brown bag concert on Monday at the Jack at noon. For families and people who would like to come over and just hang out at the
Jack. And the brown bags are no charge, right?
They're no charge at all. Yeah, and again, they're very relaxed. And there'll be highlights from the weekend with Brian and myself. And then we kick off. I mean, it's as you know, there's something every single day.
Yeah.
And if it's not obvious here, we go to Huna, Gustavus, and everywhere else around here to bring the music in addition to being into community engagement in the hospitals and the schools and the retirement centers. We are everywhere.
Yeah, the public-facing concerts are just one part of jazz and classics. Like, it's really about getting into the schools, doing community service. The musicians come in and they do workshops and things like
You've
that.
You've seen that picture of the iceberg, that you see the tip of the iceberg over the water, and then underneath it is just this massive planet of ice.
Yeah.
That's this organization.
Yeah.
The hard work that's done to create the footprint is really not visible. But the concerts are the celebratory times that everyone gets to see the hard work. But behind the scenes, that's when it's about investing in the community and the young people and also giving back to those who can't go to the concerts anymore at the retirement centers and the hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, this is a magnet for the arts, these festivals and Juno Jazz and Classics. Thank goodness for Linda Rosenthal for creating this visionary festival in the 1980s that really did hybrid, classical, and all other genres, which is what everyone's doing worldwide now. And this is the reason why Mark and Maggie O'Connor are here now, because what they do, when you see their stage tomorrow night, you're going to see a guitar, violins, spoons,
mandolin,
percussive elements, and there'll be singing. It does hybrid classic and jazz and Appalachian music, et cetera.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask is what can we expect tomorrow night from the concert? Like, are we going to hear a lot of this written music that you've done here on your album, plus other stuff? What can we expect?
Well, we've got some American classics thrown in.
Okay.
From bluegrass to Western swing, fiddle music, and then a lot of American classical. I'm kind of mostly known for my work with another famous cellist beyond Zul, Yo-Yo Ma.
Who?
Doesn't compare.
The other cellist. and I wrote Appalachia Waltz that he continues to play for him. So that music is really representative of what Maggie and I do together. We're both violinists and fiddlers, and we've got their vocal songs that Zul was talking about, and you played a little bit of from our new album. That's our
most newest album,
And that album went up to the top of the bluegrass chart and the classical crossover chart, both in the top 10 of those charts in Billboard. So that's sort of the industry take on what we do. It's like it's Americana across the board.
Well, it's happening tomorrow at 7 o'clock at the Thunder Mountain Middle School. You can find the whole schedule for the Jazz and Classics Festival at jazzandclassics.org. It's wonderful to see it back in its sort of full, big, giant capacity. It's going to be awesome.
We're literally everywhere. We're even at the Maritime Festival tomorrow.
Yeah, you're going to be there too. You're going to be there tomorrow, right?
Well, you might see me under something running from the rain, but I'll be there and enjoying it. I loved it last year.
Do you play out there at all?
There are rumors going around that there might be some sounds that sound ish like a cello.
And that rain will help with that instrument, as you said. Okay. You'll be under the tent.
There's a special instrument that Zul has for rain.
Oh, right? I do. I have the carbon fiber cello that it will survive longer than a wooden cello.
And maybe if it
rains
a little bit.
Hard enough, you could actually get into the cello and row off in the water.
That's funny.
I love that concept.
Well, it was a pleasure. It was a nice surprise to have you both in here. Mark and Maggie O'Connor, they're going to be playing tomorrow night. We'll have some other of the artists over the coming weeks coming in to visit us here on Juno Afternoon. But that's it for the show today. Gunnath Cheech for coming in, y'all. I really appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening out there.
Yeah. And this is, yeah, absolutely. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO and KAUK. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunnath Cheech, have a fantastic weekend. There's so much going on.